You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza.
Alan Cardoza.
Only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome. I'm Alan Cardoza and you're listening to Answers for the Family. Each Monday at 11 a.m., this show brings you answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Answers for the Family will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and international parental abduction. We will introduce you to specialized schools and treatment programs that can really help, and new innovations in the areas of health and security for your family. With over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate enough to meet and work with some of the top professionals in these areas of expertise. I will bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. I'm thrilled to have as my guest today one such talented professional, board-certified obstetrician-gynecologist and author of over 50 books and videos, Dr. Art Uhlein. Art, who contributed to NBC's Today Show for 23 years, pioneered the use of television to promote good public health. Now, a highly sought-after keynote speaker and much more, Art, thank you so much for being here today.
Alan, it's a pleasure to be here.
I don't know, you know exactly who's listening out there, but anybody, if you are, especially if you're from Southern California, Art is someone who is a name that just rolls off your tongue. I mean, for any of us that that was watching television in the 80s, we watched your show, and that's kind of where we started to learn about public health. So well, I thank you for that.
You're welcome. And especially if you've got gray hair, you're likely to recognize this voice.
Well, and that's nice, too, because now I'm not alone. I'm usually the only one here. Now, I know that what I found is time seems to go by so fast here, so I'm going to get right to it. And I think one of the things that I want to touch on real quickly is, you know, more than at any other time that I can remember, our stress levels seem to be at an all-time high. How much are these high stress levels affecting our health, and what can we do about that?
Well, the question is, does stress affect your health, or is it poorly managed stress? And the fact of the matter is, you cannot escape this stress-filled world. We live with stress, and the issue for me is not can I get away from it completely. You can some. But how can I manage it so it doesn't make me sick? The evidence is stunningly strong here. Stress can make you sick if you don't handle it well. It contributes to hypertension, to an increased incidence of heart attacks, of stroke. It clearly contributes to the obesity epidemic. Every stress eater out there knows what I'm talking about. So it's a question of trying to stop stress from making you sick. And there are really two approaches, really probably three approaches. One is to recognize that you don't have to join the race, mm-hmm. that there are certain elements of stress that are actually avoidable, preventable. You don't have to go shopping when everyone else is shopping and get angry in the long lines. Mm-hmm. Many times you can say no. Learning how to say no to people when they say, will you do this for me? Will you do that for me? I call that returning stress to its rightful owner. No, that's your problem. You take care of it. So there are certain things, not charging things to the credit card. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of people out there can relate to that. Simplifying your life, getting the clutter out of your life. For me, it's getting the noise out of life. I love quiet. It calms my mind. So that's one issue. A second element is literally training your body. how to resist the effects of stress. Most people assume that everybody knows you get under stress, your heart rate goes up, your blood pressure goes up. Some people, they turn red in the face. I mean, the changes, the physiologic changes are profound. But and most people think that's out of their control. Truth of the matter is that with practice, using relaxation techniques and using them regularly, you can learn to control your heart rate. You can control your breathing. You can calm your mind. One of the things I love to do with audiences is show them how I can regulate my heart rate. Mm-hmm. I can literally, by putting an unpleasant thought, I make an image of my mind of someone who really upsets me with her behavior. Really upsets me.
Hold on. Was that Freudian? Because you used her.
No, that's a very specific person. My pulse rate goes to 100. Literally. It will go from 60 to 100 in 60 seconds. And then I put a picture in my mind's eye of Cane Garden Bay, Tortola, one of the most beautiful places I've ever been in my life. And using visual imagery, I put myself on the beach there, and I can bring my pulse rate down to 50. Mm-hmm. Now, let me tell you what the significance of this is. If you do it once in a while as a stunt for an audience, it's not going to change your health. But if you're constantly walking around with a heart rate of 80 or 85 instead of a heart rate of 50, as I am, you're working your heart unnecessarily. One extra beat per minute, maintained for a year, just one beat per minute, the difference between 71 beats per minute and 70 is 435,000 extra heartbeats in a year.
Wow.
Why work your heart like that? Mm-hmm. It's not necessary.
Well, and especially if you're of the belief that it only has a certain amount of beats, why use them up quicker than you have to?
Crazy way to waste those heartbeats, that's right.
Now, how you mentioned obesity. How is that epidemic affecting the same thing as far as your heartbeat and how that affects every part of your life?
Well, we have just begun to appreciate the damaging effects of obesity. Most people have treated it as a cosmetic problem. I don't like the way I look. They look at children and they don't like the way their clothes fit. The fact of the matter is that obesity has contributed fantastically to the increasing rates of heart disease, stroke, diabetes, kidney failure. I mean, we literally have an epidemic of obesity in this country. And for me, by the way, this is a show about the family and about parenting. For me, what's going on in this country with obesity is a mirror on the family, particularly when you're looking at children. If you're looking at overweight kids, you cannot help, if you look under the surface, but realize there's family dysfunction there. There's family neglect there. I, by the way, believe that genetics does play some role here. So if you want to say, no, it's all in my genes, it runs in the family, I'll buy about one-third of today's obesity. If you look back to 1970, 5% of children were what we would now consider, in adult terms, obese. Today, the figures are running closer to 16, 17, 18%.
Wow.
So if you want to say 5% of it, you know, one-third of it, one-quarter of it is genetic contribution, I'll buy that. The rest of it is, in my opinion, related to the lack of family discipline, supervision, unity, time together, nutrition, all of these things.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, do you see a root cause? I mean, as far as the obesity, is there one thing more than the other? I mean, is it because of the stress? Is it because of the fact that we now don't have time for it, so we're in the fast food generation?
I would say that we make excuses. If you made me pin it down to one thing, it would be excuses. Okay. I don't have time to exercise. Physical activity, the lack of physical activity among our children is clearly a huge contributor. I don't have time to cook meals for my children. How hogwash. I mean, come on, I don't buy that. That's an excuse. I'm not able to be home to eat with my children. That's funny. My son-in-law is as busy a surgeon, an orthopedic pediatric surgeon, as you could find in the world, but he's home every night for dinner with his children when he's in the city. So,
it sounds like it's a lack of discipline.
I think it's family responsibility. I think parents have given up their responsible role for supervising what their children do. I think some of it, I don't think it's done deliberately. I don't think if parents appreciated the long-term consequences of this behavior, I don't believe they would do this with their children's nutrition. But they just somehow assume that, gosh, we live in this wonderful society, rich society, we're surrounded by foods. They don't pay attention to what their children are eating. They don't eat with their children.
Yeah, I think that's huge.
And they don't eat at home with their children. And eating at home with your children, serving fresh foods, is, I think, the single most important thing you can do to promote their long-term, lifelong physical health.
Yeah, amen. I could not agree more. Now, from that standpoint, how now is that affecting the mental side of these children? Because now the part that I'm dealing with, you know, I'm transporting them to programs. And there are programs now opening up specializing in dealing with obese kids.
Right.
So that they are setting them up on diet and nutrition, but they're also having some psychological problems. I mean, do you think this is a direct result?
Well, I think it's impossible to separate the two. If you grew up in a family that doesn't eat together, doesn't eat well, doesn't have rules, doesn't have discipline, doesn't have limits, doesn't talk about these issues, how can you expect any outcome except undisciplined children, a large percentage of whom are overweight or using substances? I mean, to me, we got to get back to the root cause, which is the deterioration of the family as we knew it.
Mm-hmm. More from a medical standpoint, what can they start doing? In other words, what can the parent, is there any sort of testing that they can do to be able to see where their deficiencies are so they can have it right in their face?
Well, there are a number of things you can do. I'm not sure that much of that is necessary. I mean, you look at a child, and by the way, I don't think we should restrict this advice to children who are just overweight.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you need to look at children who are inactive today, who are locked up with earbuds in their ears and a screen in front of them instead of being physically active. You look at the amount of time you actually spend talking to your children. Look at the way they talk back to you. And those are you could go to a doctor, you could get a BMI, you know, the body measurements to see what percentage body fat they have. You could do blood tests, I don't think it's necessary to do that. Any thinking parent can sit down and quickly assess the health of his or her family, the health of his or her children. By the way, there's some really shocking data out. Some of the states are doing what they call an annual state of the children's health report. I brought one here from Illinois, where they showed that overall, more than 10% of the children in the state were in poor health. About 20% were only in so-so health. Mm. I mean, this is crazy. Childhood is supposed to be the time of health. So I consider this to be the great emergency and the great priority.
Well, and I think you nailed it from the standpoint of with the parents. And while you were saying that, it reminded me of a transport that I was doing. I was taking a young man to a specialized program, and I had already dismissed the parents. I had sent them to their room. And as I am leaving, they've already said their goodbye, so they're not supposed to come back out. But as I am leaving, the parent runs up behind me and hands me a bag of hamburgers.
Oh, my.
And I said, excuse me, I don't need this. She goes, no, he has to have these. And I go, what do you mean he has to have these? She goes, this is all he'll eat. I go, he'll eat something else, please. And at that point in time, it started to undermine everything that I had just set up with the child. But for the parents at that point the terror in their eyes of, you can't leave the house without a bag of hamburgers from a fast food chain, just astonished me.
It's you see this again and again and again, where the children are in control. Literally, the children are in control of what's going on, and it goes. It covers every element of life, from nutrition to communications to time spent together to what they do. You see parents backing away from their responsibility because they don't want conflict.
Mm-hmm. What are our answers? Where do we go from here?
I say go back to basics. And you have to understand, this is not about your peace today. This is about the health of your child 20, 40, and 60 years from now. The decisions that parents are making today, or not making,
right,
are going to determine literally, to put it in medical terms, the morbidity and mortality of their children. It does not sound, eating fish once a week may not sound important, except it reduces all-cause mortality, your risk of death, by 22%. You can literally promote health in your child's life. Making a child eat calcium-containing foods, particularly among girls, will determine whether or not those girls' bones are breaking at the ages of 60 and 70. I could go on and on with things that seem so simple. Forcing your children to eat whole grains and cereals and a wide variety of fruits and vegetables will decrease their risk of heart attack and stroke by 30%. So I get back from parents, yeah, but how do I make them eat that? The answer is, if that's the only thing you have in your house,
that's right,
when they grow up, that's what they'll eat. This is nonsense, leaving the children in control of decisions that literally are life-giving and life-threatening.
Mm-hmm. Oh, again, I couldn't agree more. I mean, we have more and more situations to where we are finding we're being asked to pick up children that have a refrigerator in their bedroom.
Amazing.
You know, they have, so here you have someone, and I'm thinking of one case in particular, you have a bed, you have a flat screen TV, you have video handsets, I guess they call them, and his own refrigerator sitting next to his bed. And the parents, you know, part of their complaint when we're doing the intake was, we just don't know what to do anymore. We can't get him to go out of his room. Well, you put everything in there.
Amazing.
Well, one of the things that I know I want to touch on is also addictions. You know, there's programs now popping up that are claiming that they're now going to deal with food addiction. There's gambling addiction. Obviously, there's been drug addiction programs out there now for many, many years. Do you think this is a true addiction, this food addiction?
Well, it's hard to know. In the sense that we've come to understand addiction, like, for example, a nicotine addiction, which mm-hmm. is just an incredibly physically, chemically changing event. No, it's probably not an addiction. But there clearly are some psychological addictions, which, by the way, may have biochemical roots. We're now beginning to understand, as with new exotic PET scanning and with the development of certain medications, we are beginning to understand that there may be biological roots to some of the behaviors we have. And we see this both in terms of medications that can reduce addictive behavior and now the appearance of a couple of medications that actually produce addictive behavior. So I think it's a very difficult question for me to answer. I'm not an expert in that area, but I think it is important for parents to recognize when a child's behavior escapes the bounds of normal, escapes the bounds of reasonable, and takes action. How do you take action? You get help from mental health professionals or from your pediatrician. You don't stand by and watch helplessly.
You mentioned pharmaceuticals. Do you think the pharmaceutical companies have gone too far?
Boy, this is a tough one. Because, you know, in my opinion, we are an over-medicalized society. We have done our darndest to create diseases to fit the drugs we've got. But I have got to tell you that, in my opinion, modern medicine, pharmaceuticals, are far and away the best value for the dollar we have in medicine. See, I trained as a physician at a time when mental hospitals across the country were filled with hundreds of thousands of mentally ill patients, depressed, psychotic, schizophrenic, who these people are now functioning in out on the streets. There, we don't have mental hospitals like that any longer. I can tell you that when I was a resident, we could not get a patient onto the surgical floor because every bed was filled with someone who had just had an operation for ulcers. Modern drugs have eliminated surgery as a treatment for ulcers. So I could go on and on and on with the number of good things that pharmaceuticals have done. Having said that, I think we push drugs too far, too fast, and I think the pharmaceutical companies have ripped us off with their pricing strategies. By the way, with our government not cooperating at all.
Well, that certainly doesn't surprise me. More specifically, what I was thinking is that, you know, from the standpoint of, you know, the Ritalin, the Prozac, I mean, as it relates to, because I've got nothing against the pharmaceutical industry, because I agree they've done a lot of huge things, but from the standpoint of dealing from the psychiatric standpoint, I mean, would you feel that maybe we have too many kids now, and even with the side effects? Because now I'm being told that a lot of the kids, one of the reasons why they are, quote, obese, is because they're now on such a high dose of, you know, fill in the blank, Ritalin, right, Prozac, whatever, that they're just so sluggish now that they may not be acting out like they were before, but they're so sluggish that, you know, it's bringing on new problems.
Well, here again, I think there's probably a middle ground. Have we gone too far to the extreme? I see people at both extremes. I see people whose children would clearly benefit from medication, at least temporarily, who absolutely will have no part of it. And I see parents and doctors at the other end of the spectrum abusing drugs, really, overusing them, using them in doses that they're not titrating carefully and not observing carefully. So but I don't think we should throw out the baby with the bathwater. And I think the key thing here is to find a conservative physician who understands where drugs fit into the pattern and who uses them appropriately, who makes observes the situation frequently and is just as willing to take a child off a drug as to put one on.
Okay, well, and that actually, that's one of the questions that I've got. I mean, do you believe that is the first step? I mean, the first step for the parent when they start to see some of these problems is to see their physician first. I mean, their family physician. That's the first step?
Yes, I think it is a good idea to start with the family physician. I'll tell you the problem we've got. Family physicians, especially pediatricians, whom I think are the saints of medicine, are drowning right now in patients, don't have a lot of time to spend with patients, are being incredibly underpaid for the time they do spend. So my advice would be to take an active advocate's role in this yourself on behalf of your child. I tell people, if you've got the flu, if you got a minor problem, if you're concerned because your child is gaining a little bit of weight, you sit down with your family doctor, your pediatrician, and you develop a plan for that. If you've got a catastrophic illness, you got cancer, you go to a specialist. Mm-hmm. So my feeling about this is you do this in stages. You go in, you start with a simple plan. If it doesn't work, you can move to a step two plan. But if your child is falling rapidly or far behind, you find someone who specializes in the treatment of this problem. You spend whatever it takes to do that. You give up the new car this year, you give up the vacation, and you invest it in finding an expert for your child's health.
I couldn't agree more. We're fortunate in the sense we have gotten some listener questions, and let me go to some of those. One of which, on the subject of addiction, we have a listener that emailed in a question saying that addiction runs deep in my family, three generations of alcoholics. I've noticed myself start to drink for the feeling. Should I get help, or is the casual drink all right?
If you're drinking for the feeling, you got a problem. Period. End of report. Done. I have nothing more to say. That is one of the most concise descriptions I have heard of a person at risk ever.
Yeah.
I drink for the feeling. By definition, you have a problem.
Well, yeah, I liked that question. When I saw it, I went, wow, this is somebody that kind of has a bit of an idea of what's going on in them. Now we've got... in regards to the healthy foods area, we've got a question from a listener that says, I find it difficult to afford healthy food. The fattier meats and canned products are always cheaper, especially now since things are getting tighter with our budget. Is there a way you suggest I could feed a family of four, it says, healthily, but with thrift? Now, I'm not sure. I didn't look it up. I'm not sure that healthily, excuse me if I don't know that word, but... I think they in a more healthy manner.
I know what it means. I know what it means, and I applaud this parent for asking that kind of question. First of all, there is absolutely no reason. The word meat was the red flag that went up for me. My 12-year-old granddaughter is a vegetarian, and by the way, a gifted athlete as well. And so, you know, you hear people who say, well, I'm worried about my child being healthy on a vegetarian diet. In fact, far and away, the healthiest way to feed a child is with fresh foods, whole grains, fresh fruits, fresh vegetables, whole grains and cereals, legumes, which are beans, and small amounts, occasional small amounts of meat, chicken, and fish. And my guess is by cutting the meat down to very small amounts, by sprinkling in some fish, and concentrating on fresh foods, the less refined, the better. You'll get the health protection you want, and you'll protect your budget.
Okay. We have another question, again from a listener. It says, I have a teenage daughter who is as, quote, fun as I was at that age. She's been given a diagnosis of a thyroid problem. Her weight gain has changed her level of self-confidence completely. What kinds of foods and vitamins should I buy to stabilize things as much as possible? And that sounds like what you just said, really.
Well, it's an interesting question, because if she has a real thyroid problem, and this is not rocket science, it's very easy to diagnose thyroid disease today, then she should first of all be treated for that problem. I'm assuming she is hypothyroid. They're very simple treatments. It's a replacement of the thyroid hormone. And that will at least put her on level ground. A child who is deficient in thyroid hormone, even eating well, is probably going to gain weight. So start there. The second issue is a healthy diet. We've just talked about it. It involves variety and unprocessed foods and foods that are low in calories and rich in nutrition. We've named them already. And finally, physical activity is critical. And I would say that it is not critical just for the child, but I'd be willing to bet $2 right now to your one. Whoops, there's my gambling addiction coming in.
We got a program for that.
$2 to your one that the mother is overweight also. Because one of the most powerful predictors of obesity in a child is maternal obesity, not because of heredity, not because of genetics, but because of inactivity and overeating. So what I would encourage the mother is to get with this child mm-hmm. on a program of healthy eating and physical activity every day.
Right.
60 minutes of physical activity every day. Walking, housework, gardening, running, games, they all count.
Right. And I think that goes back to what you were saying earlier about the family doing things together. This is one more thing. You can be doing it together, and you're really covering two different areas with, right. you know, with one action.
And by the way, the child does not have to know that she's on a weight loss program. This is not about losing weight. This is about gaining physical fitness. This is about reestablishing family rapport.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you may have nailed that too, because I thought it was interesting. The quote was, you know, I have a teenage daughter who is as fun as I was at that age. And I'm not sure what that meant.
Well, I actually like that part of it. When I was practicing a long time ago, I had a new patient, I would sit down and I'd go through long series of medical questions. What's your history? What about your family? And then I would say, have you ever had your serum fun level measured? And they say, serum fun level? What's that? And I would talk about my belief that fun, enjoying life, having a lust for life, is as important a contributor to overall health as is your weight and your blood pressure. People would say, well, gosh, if that's so important, how come no one ever asked me before? And it's not hard to measure. So I like the fact that this mother does care about that element in her child's life. Now she needs to go out and have fun with her child.
Well, let me keep rolling. You mentioned nicotine, and we have another question from a listener that says, my son is 14 and smokes constantly. Now, I got a problem with that already because they're 14, but that's a whole other story. It says, I've caught him a few times. What can I do to get him to quit? Is there a way?
Boy, this is really tough. And I get this because I started smoking at the age of 11 and smoked until I was 33. Fascinating story how I finally quit. But I'd get help. I think this is an area, a 14-year-old who cannot quit, and this is such a critically serious issue from a health point of view, that I would seek professional help. I'd talk to the pediatrician who has experience with this kind of problem and can help you do it. Just telling a child to quit who's hooked on nicotine ain't going to work.
Yeah, I think the biggest issue that I've got with it is the fact that they're 14, and how did they get to the point that they're smoking constantly anyway?
Without being noticed.
Yeah. In other words, you know, how did the parents not notice it? Did they not smell it? Or again, if they're smokers themselves, maybe they don't, which actually reminds me. I mean, I had a home care case that we were working with, and we set up all the parameters for the family. We set up a structure for the family, and we were made the arbiters of this contract. So the contract everybody signed on. And not smoking was one of the issues for, at that time, I want to say, I think he was 15, for the 15-year-old son. And I get a call from the parent that says, Johnny's smoking in his room. I go, okay, what does it say in the contract? I don't have it memorized. Well, it says that he has a loss of privacy for 30 days if he violates that part of the contract. I said, okay, I'll be right there. So I got there with one of my associates.
And a screwdriver, I'll bet.
Exactly. You got it. And a screwdriver. And we popped the door off the hinges and took it and put it in the rafters in the garage and said, we'll be back in 30 days. Well, he had a fit. He said, you can't do that. He goes, I've got little brothers and sisters. They're going to be coming in here all the time. They're going to bug me and so on and so forth. And I go, this is what it says in the contract, loss of privacy. And he said, well, my interpretation of that meant that I would have to keep my door open, or I would have to do this. And I said, that's one of the problems with the parents, and actually why a family contract works,
right,
is their interpretation. And with that contract, I mean, you know, there's other families that I'd work with to where they would say that smoking was okay. And I'd go, we're not making a contract for me. This isn't what I would do with my family. This is what you're going to do with yours. There have been some families where the family was, they smoked, and so they thought it was okay for their 16-year-old to smoke. But, you know, it's amazing to me, you know, that with all of the knowledge that's there, that we know what this does, that we still have people that are allowing their kids to smoke.
Well, this also gets to this issue of behavior having consequences. If parents don't want their kids to smoke, and it's illegal.
Yeah.
I mean, let's just start with that. It's illegal, and it's going to kill the kids.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to literally take decades off their life. So you shouldn't want your kids to smoke. You ought to be willing to put a stake in the ground and say, this is so important to me. Here's the price you're going to pay if you continue to smoke. By the way, I ask myself a question. Where does a kid get $3.50, $4 for a carton of cigarettes? How much are cigarettes now?
Well, I don't know.
But
I would guess they're about $4 a pack or so.
That's just insane. Where does the kid get the money? And what I would do is strip away all of the privileges, all of the money. I wouldn't give my kid money to buy cigarettes. Mm-hmm. And perhaps be willing to put a stake in the ground on an issue this important.
Right. And I get parents at times that'll go, but you know, they're not going to love me, or they're going to do this. Well, you know what? They're going to say a lot of things to manipulate you. If you truly love them, just tell them, you know, I love you so much, I want you to be around a really long time.
Someday they will appreciate it. There's no question, a belligerent teenager is not fun to deal with. But you either have to be the parent or recognize your failing as a parent.
Mm-hmm. I think that's very well put. Let me pull up another question here. We have one, again, from a listener. It says, my child suffers from ADHD. I feel like this causes many other problems in school and at home. Do you think so much medication is necessary, or is there another way to get my child focused? So obviously there's a question within the question, and I didn't want to distort the question, you know, as it came in, but obviously when I read it, what I got out of it is that, yes, their child's suffering from ADHD, but it sounds like they're already dealing with someone who has already maybe put them on medication because they're concerned about that.
That's the inference I got from it, too. And to me, this question would be answered in the following way, with another question. Is the medication working? Is it making a difference? There are, in fact, a number of very, very useful tools around that enable parents, teachers, the children themselves and their doctors to make an assessment both before and after medication as to whether the medication's making a difference. If the medication is making a dramatic difference in a child's behavior, enabling that child to succeed in school and to function well socially, then I personally would choose for my child to medicate the child.
Mm-hmm.
If the medication is not making a difference or is making such an insignificant difference that one can't justify the cost or is producing side effects, then I'd stop the medication. I'd ask, is there another medication available? I'd be willing to test medications in an objective fashion using these questionnaire tools that are available. And that's how I would answer that question.
Yeah. How much of the ADHD might be nutritional?
You're asking a good question, and I don't think we fully know the answer. I'm not an expert in that area either. But I will tell you that I don't buy this argument about kids who go off on sugar highs or it's the additives in food. I have really not seen good scientific studies that document this. I will tell you that a child who is not healthy and fit because the child isn't eating well, isn't sleeping well, a child who is not physically sound and not well rested is not going to function the next day. So I think it's really important that we look at this in a holistic fashion. There are some people who want to hang their entire hat on a diagnosis of ADHD. There are some people who would lean their therapy entirely on a medication for ADHD. And I say that you really have to look at this in a holistic fashion. Child's nutrition, child's physical status, family communications, stress levels, and treat all of those if they need change.
Yeah, and find a happy medium that works for them.
Exactly.
I want to change it up a little bit. Now, a lot of our listeners are people that are within this profession. I mean, they are counselors, psychologists, psychiatrists, therapists, school admissions people. And I learned, and in learning a little bit more about you, you know, because many of our listeners are involved to some degree with the mental health industry, as a value-added bonus, could you share with us how the rational use of free media can be used not only to lower cost, but to increase the impact and reach of any organization's marketing effort? So I appreciate you're helping all of us, and this obviously goes out to parents as well. But now, those of us in the industry, how can you help us get the message out there?
Well, just sitting here at this table actually is an interesting example. I wish I had something to sell. I've retired and I'm in payback mode now. But this is an example of what we would call free media. Some people don't understand mm-hmm. what we mean by free media. And by free media, I'm referring to any form of publicity, advertising, or communication that you don't have to pay for. You got to buy an ad in a newspaper. You have to pay to send out a mailing. But I did not pay Alan anything to be on this program. And I should tell you, he's not paying me either. This is free media. And if I had an important message to communicate to people, this would be an excellent way to do it. Writing a column, letters to the editor, creating a campaign in your community. If you are let's say you're an administrator of a school that cares for children who with severe behavior problems, you don't have to limit your effectiveness to the children who are in your school. It's time to take the knowledge you have out to your community as a whole and use it in a preventive way. How do you do that? Call your local radio stations. Call the editor of the local paper. Call some of the businesses in town and try to get them to sponsor a campaign for parents. There's so many things you can do. And quite frankly, I think the message has much more impact, much more power, when it comes through a medium like this or through your local newspaper or your local TV station than it does through a paid ad in the mail.
Well, again, I agree, obviously, because I'm doing this, but I think that's the type of things that will help this industry. I mean, it'll help the people to know that they can go do that, that it's more than just printing a brochure and mailing it out to people, but being able to make this type of contact, I think, is wonderful.
Well, I've listened to your programs. I went on the net and listened to some previous programs, so I had a little idea of what I was in for. And what impressed me was that you have enabled a large, significant number of experts in their fields to share their information, both with other experts, because I'm sure mm-hmm. there are professionals listening right now, and with parents who need this information. In return, by the way, I would be surprised if a parent didn't pick up a phone at some point and say, I was really impressed with what he or she had to say. How do I find that person to help my child? So that's a great example of using free media. It's a win-win-win strategy.
Yeah, which actually reminds me, I do need to mention us. And if you have any questions, anybody out there, if you have any questions for Art, if you have any questions for us, you can go to the website, which is Answers for the Family. That's the numeral 4. So it's answersforthefamily.com. If you send in, if you have any questions, if you have comments, we have a blog there. If you just got the tail end of this show and you want to hear all of the show, if you go to that website, within 24 hours, we will have the entire show listed on the website for you to listen to, as well as looking at some of the shows that we've had in the past. And believe it or not, the time has just flown by. We don't have too much time, but I do want to ask you to do one more thing for us, and that is, I know that there's a relaxation therapy type of thing that you do. You do at some of your seminars. And if you could do a little relaxation therapy for our listeners, if Art consents to do this, for those of you driving, don't close your eyes, okay?
You can pull over to the curb.
There you go. You can pull over to the curb, but don't close your eyes and get too relaxed.
Pull over to the curb, put the car in park, turn the engine off, and then do the following. Close your eyes and take a few deep breaths. Breathe in really deeply through your nose. Fill your lungs as deeply as you can, and then slowly blow that air out through pursed lips. And as you do, let your muscles relax. Deep breath in. Blow it out. And with each breath in and out that you take, let your muscles relax just a little bit more. And as you breathe in, say to yourself silently, I am. And as you breathe out, say the word, relaxed. I am relaxed. Now continue breathing deeply and slowly for just a few more seconds. And as you do, let all of the tension flow out of your muscles. And now I want you to make a picture in your mind's eye of the most beautiful place you have ever been in the world. For some, it's the mountains. For some, it's the desert. For others, it's the beach. Find your beautiful, relaxing place and make a picture of it in your mind's eye. See every single detail as clearly as you can. And now put yourself in that picture. Sit down in that picture and feel the sun's warmth on your skin as you breathe slowly and deeply. Now I want you to look around this beautiful, relaxing scene for the first creature you can find. Find a living creature in that scene. And now call to the creature in your mind's eye, silently call out, say, come here, little creature. I want to be your friend. Slowly, breathe deeply, and the creature will come over to you. Now tell the creature your name. In your mind's eye, tell the creature your name and ask the creature to tell you its name. Now I want you to tell the creature that you have to leave, but that you will be back to visit again. And slowly, open your eyes. Feel more relaxed?
I know I do.
Did you find a creature?
Yes, I did.
What was it?
It was a bear cub.
And what was the bear cub's name?
I didn't get it.
You can go back and find out the name. Here's the astonishing thing about this. You feel different than you did at the...
Yes, much more relaxed.
So do I as well. And I'm sure anybody who actually followed our instructions will feel transformed. Here's what's amazing about this experience. In literally 45 seconds, 60 seconds, I was able to slow your heart rate, calm your breathing, relieve muscle tension, and I think, just judging from your face, improve the way you felt.
Absolutely.
So you don't need drugs, but you do need to take the time. You do need to be willing to treat this as important. Remember, one beat per minute on your heart rate, sustained for a year, is 435,000 unnecessary heartbeats in a year. So be kind to yourself. I would like you all to go back and revisit your animal. That animal is your inner self. You'd be surprised what you can learn talking to that little creature.
Art, I want to thank you. As I said, the time just went by very, very quickly. I do hope that that I can have you back sometime. This is a wonderful experience, both for me and I hope for the listeners and everybody out there. Be good to yourself. May you all have good health, happiness, and many blessings. This is Alan Cardoza with Answers of the Family. Have a great week. Bye now.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza.
Alan Cardoza.
Only on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.